Hey everybody, this is Andy Marquette. I am joined by my colleague and friend Lise McTague. We are Let's Geek Out! Except today we're actually the Cameron Hurley fan club.
This is about our third episode where we're talking either about Cameron Hurley or with Cameron Hurley. And Cameron, we would love to have you on for your next book.
We're just saying. Yes, please. Anyway, today we'll be talking about Cameron's latest book. And when we had her on last time, please, for when we interviewed her, we were talking about it as well, called The Light Brigade. And it dropped... When was that? Like November? It dropped in...
In April.
No, it dropped recently. Yeah.
Yeah, April.
April.
We had her on in... it's either March or April, because we had her on in March.
Okay, yeah. So, Lise and I both read it, because we are huge Cameron Hurley fans, and we both freaking loved it. What? Of course we did. So, we're going to chat about it today, and it is... It's a mind fuck. But that's Cameron Hurley's work. That's her work. I mean, she's like, we'll talk about it in a minute. So let's talk. Let me give everybody like a heads up on what The Light Brigade is about. And I found a pretty nice review at Publishers Weekly that is a very succinct kind of synopsis of it, because it's really difficult to describe Cameron Hurley's work in like a paragraph or less. And you don't want to give away spoilers, because as her stories unfold, invariably, there's this like organic kind of process that happens. So like one thing leads to the other in a really seamless way. And you can't tease out things, because you may do big reveals. And we don't want to do that. We would like to encourage everybody to read this book, which is standalone, as far as I know. And so you don't have to like, you know, read a whole series to get caught up. And this is a great introduction to her work, I think. Okay, so let me give everybody a heads up on what The Light Brigade is all about. Okay, so Cameron Hurley, first off, she's a Hugo-winning science fiction and speculative fiction writer and an essayist. She is known for Geek Feminist Revolution, that amazing collection of her essays. And she is just like changing and bending the science fiction genre, I think, in really interesting ways.
Agreed.
If you read things like her God's War trilogy, where she's dealing with bug punk, that's the word that's used, where the machinery is sort of this organic creation of insects. And you and I read one of her other works and raved about it. And it's got that kind of organic, fleshy feel to it. So she's got a really different take. And that was The Stars Are Legion, was that book. But Light Brigade has... It's completely different than that, but it's got a Cameron Hurley-esque flavor. So this particular review calls it a smart, brutal, and structurally sophisticated military science fiction tale with a time travel twist, which pretty much sums it up. So what we are dealing with is an infantry recruit, Dietz. She's called a ghoul. She's someone who's denied access to basic social benefits provided by the mega corporations that dominate the solar system. So basically, Dietz joins the military. It's a military operation, and she's joining it because she wants to gain full citizenship in this mega corporate warfare stage that is going on. And the setup is that the Earth is at war with Mars. And so she's all into the combat thing. She's ready to do it. And the way they drop you into combat is through tearing you apart and sending you on beams of light, like, you know, Star Trek. And then they put you back together and in the combat zone. It doesn't always go right. Sometimes people die. Sometimes they end up with body parts in places where they really shouldn't be. And Cameron Hurley has a really fabulously macabre descriptions of things that don't go right. And what happens is, as she's being beamed into combat zones, and then she comes back from these zones, she starts to notice that something is amiss or awry. And so, Lise, I'm going to turn it over to you now to start talking about what those awry things are, and then we can talk about the big themes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the big awry thing is that Dietz ends up being sort of unmoored in time. Mm-hmm. So she's, you know, beaming into these situations and beaming out, but they aren't necessarily at, you know, if you're looking at time as a linear string, she starts sort of hopping between points. And so she'll beam into a battle that, you know, won't happen for however many months. Mm-hmm. And then she'll be in that part of the time stream for a while. And then she'll beam to another battle and end up to one maybe before that time stream or even further down the line. But she can't, you know, first of all, it takes her a while to figure out what's going wrong. And it's fascinating because, you know, the first time this happens to her, this has become a known quantity about her. Remember? Because they call her like bad luck Dietz and they're like, oh yeah, Jones said this would happen. And so she just has to like do this first mission by the seat of her pants because it's not the mission that she was briefed for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's further on down the timeline, so now she's lost the context for it. And so she just kind of has to follow along. And so, you know, as she sort of goes through these cycles, you get to see, like, when she gets sort of dropped back into more innocent times, and then as the war progresses, she gets dropped into these more brutal times. And the sort of bouncing back and forth, I think, is a really great way of juxtaposing those different sort of feels of the timeline.
And that's when Dietz starts questioning what she's doing out there and starts questioning what the war is really about. And those are some of the things I thought were really interesting because, you know, she'll bounce forward and then come back and then she's trying to figure out where she is and who she is mm-hmm. in that stretch of time. And then it's like there's also kind of an understanding with some of the higher ups that Dietz is different, that she's doing these things
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to tap into that to figure out what's happening in the future in the war, or as right. I would put it, there's like they're calling it a war, but there's like all of these different fronts.
Yeah. And you never know, you know, which one is, you know, who's actually fighting who.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets very sort of 1984 in places, you know, where it's like, no, we've always been at war with East Asia.
Well, right. No, right.
Last week we weren't, and now we are. But there are all these, like, you know, the corporations, their loyalties to each other are always, you know, in sort of constant flux.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even supposed to be fighting the corporations. They're supposed to be fighting Mars. But then you start wondering, okay, so why? And, you know, so Dietz joins up because there was this big event. She's from Sao Paulo. And this event called the Blink happened, where basically like 1.5 million people were just sort of disappeared from the face of the earth, including her entire family and a lot of the people that she knew and grew up with. And so she joins, you know, signs up with her corp to go to fight against these evil Martians who she's being told are the ones who perpetrated this thing upon her. And she sees herself as a holy warrior. You know,
mm-hmm.
a paladin, which
a knight,
know, paladins,
a knight. Mm-hmm. Remember,
oh,
she
no.
was using that term.
Yeah, well, knights are one thing, but paladins are like, you know, like a next level up as far as like, you know, purity of purpose is considered. And so she really thinks that, you know, what she's doing is pure. But the longer she's in this, like, sort of this bouncing around grind, the more she just starts to question the validity of her purpose
mm-hmm.
in a way that I don't think we would have seen if she'd progressed through that part of the war in a linear fashion.
No, I absolutely agree. I think that the interesting thing about Hurley's use of these time drops out of order, you kind of got the sense that Dietz was caught in this loop. Like, mm-hmm. and she starts figuring it out too. She starts seeing that this war is a constant and it's mm-hmm. it's like an endless loop of progressively worse and worse things. And there's mention of these giant corporations. And I was reminded, I don't know if you saw Blade Runner 2049 or even the original Blade Runner, that there's this sense, this dystopic sense of corporations running the world, that basically yeah. you're beholden to a corporate entity and like the world is a shit show. There's like everything's gross and corroded and polluted and everything's corporate. So you're
right. And everything is run against a bottom line. I mean, you were talking about how the soldiers are dropped into combat and you were comparing it to like how it happens on Star Trek. Well, I mean, Star Trek is an interesting comparison because Star Trek is a utopian society, at least comparatively speaking, as long as we don't look at DS9. And in Star Trek, yeah, they have the transporters, but every effort is made to make sure that they are safe. And transporter accidents are rare. At least that's what, you know, you're given to understand as part of the mythos of the world. You can't say that about the accidents that happen when people are beaming in and out. I mean, we see so many instances of that happening, and it's just sort of like one of those things where it's just like, well, you know, it costs too much money to figure out why people are coming back wrong, or the equipment would be too expensive to upgrade, or the techs would have to get more training, or, you know, there are all these reasons why the status quo is good enough in a way that you wouldn't see in a Star Trek world. You know, where that one loss of human life would be too much. Here, that loss of human life is just, it's a statistic, it's a number.
Right.
It's ticked down, and then you keep moving forward.
That's a really good point. One of the things, too, that I was thinking about in terms of the Light Brigade was, and it was one of the most emotionally wrenching things, was when, you know, Dietz would jump ahead, and she would see her squad mates killed or horrifically maimed. And then she would like jump back and they would be okay. And so she would have to deal with knowing what was coming for them, you know, and not being able to really do anything about it. So first, so she saw them like get maimed or killed, and then she would come back and they're still alive. So she had this knowledge. What do you do with that? I don't even know. I mean, that was really an interesting aspect, I thought, to this particular book.
Yeah, the sense that they're on borrowed time. You know, it's like that old question. If you could know the time, you know, the date and time of when you die, would you want to know?
Right. You know, but Dietz then has to go through it twice.
Mm-hmm.
At least twice.
Right. And, you know, there's this thing when you know something's going to happen where you're basically pre-mourning the entire time, like prepping yourself for this thing, which it doesn't matter how much you prep yourself for, is still just going to devastate you.
Yeah. It's,
you know, and anyone who's had an elderly parent or, you know, a pet or something go through that, you know what's happening. And it doesn't matter how much you try to steel yourself for it. It still just guts you when it happens.
Good point. I was thinking about, you and I were talking about our experiences reading the book the first time and just getting caught up in the story and just completely like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then reading it the second time and seeing maybe some breadcrumbs that Hurley leaves behind. We're not going to tell people what those are, but what is so interesting about Hurley's work is when you read it through the first time, especially we'll use Light Brigade. You read that through the first time. I was telling Lise, I had no idea it was going to happen. I mean, it's that good. And the structure is such that, you know, you don't know if Dietz is going to jump ahead or if she's going to jump back. You don't know what Hurley's going to do with Dietz's character. So you're just like, holy shit. And then at the end, I was like, wow. So I went, you know, you go back through to see if you can determine when she was dropping clues to the structure. And you do pick up on them. But the first time through, you're not going to know what the hell is going to happen. And that was just like, it just keeps you reading. You're just like, oh, I mean, once you start this book, I couldn't put it down.
Yeah, no, I read it through in a stupidly short amount of time. But it's so deft, you know, the way she drops these things. Because they're things that are important to the plot, but they're also important to what Dietz has to know. Mm-hmm. And so they don't stick out like, you know, like with a big neon sign pointing at them going plot point. Yeah, I mean, they're just so deftly woven in. I mean, her touch is really light when it comes to that kind of stuff, and you just don't even notice it until after the fact.
And then you think back and you're like, oh shit, that scene with these two characters set us up for that. You know, you have to like go through it and then start looking back at it. It's really, really interesting. And I love that when I read Hurley's work, I never know what's going to happen. It's not predictable at all. There are some things that, you know, I'm like, okay, I see where this is going to go and I'm right. But most of the time I'm just like, I have no idea what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just here along for the ride, and it's amazing.
And she pulls you into the world so easily that, you know, it's like you forget that you're reading a book sometimes.
Oh my God. Her world building is amazing. Can we talk about that for a minute in terms of Light Brigade? The military milieu and that she constructed here, it felt like grunts in combat. Mm-hmm. The language, the expressions, the descriptions, everything just screamed, "You're in the military, bitch!" Like, it was so good. So you get caught up in the nuances of the characters, and it was like I was there. It was like watching a movie. I mean, I would love to see this turn into a movie. Because in my head, reading the book, it was a movie.
Yeah, and I don't visualize much when I read, but man, there are scenes that it was like, they were just right there in my brain.
Right? It was, oh my God, it just felt so authentic, even though it takes place at some unknown point in the future. It just felt authentically military. And that, I so appreciate that about Hurley's work as well, is that her world building is absolutely amazing. And you're just sucked right into wherever she wants you to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there are no info dumps. Mm-mm. You find out what you need to know and what the character needs to know. And there's not, you know, a whole bunch of, hey, look at this really cool stuff that I did. Which, you know, I mean, you and I both know. We've both written sci-fi. It's really hard not to do that sometimes.
It's so hard.
Like, you spend all of this time on the world building, and there's all this cool stuff, and you just want to show off this really cool stuff that you did. And most of it's not even anywhere close to necessary to the story.
Right.
And she, you know, she avoids that. She grounds everything in the experiences of her character. And if her character doesn't know something, we don't know something. And we find out with Deets.
Which is so amazing. And remember when she talked with us in our interview with her, she was talking about how this book proved to be really difficult to write. Mm-hmm. That it took her a while, that her agent and her editors were like, what the hell are you doing? Oh my God, do this XYZ. And then it was a process. Yeah. It was a really difficult thing to write. And I think that the finished product, and I tweeted at her after I finished the book that it was fucking mind blowing. I said, this was amazing. So, because you can just see the work that went into it, but it's almost effortless the way the story unfolds.
Yeah.
It was that good. So let's talk about some of the themes, Lise. I'm going to turn you loose on lost causes.
Yeah, well, and I don't want to get too spoilery on this, but, you know, it becomes pretty evident pretty quickly that this war, I mean, it's a grind. It starts to feel that it exists less because of some, you know, concrete reason, some concrete thing that happened, and more because war does something for the corp, you know, it brings something to the table for them. Mm-hmm. And so by definition, all of the causes are lost because you don't really have one. And so everything that Deets thinks she's fighting for, you know, it's all in the back of the corporation. The corporation is built on lies. So where's the foundation? Where's the stability? And, you know, when it comes down to it, and Deets says this a couple of times, is that, you know, you end up fighting wars for the people in the foxhole next to you, right? You know, you're not fighting it for your corporate masters. You're fighting it so that the guy or the chick next to you, who you are now considered part of a family, continues to exist. And so that becomes her cause. But even then, you know, she's losing that because she knows what's going to happen to these people as she's bouncing back and forth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she starts out with these, you know, this great ideal, and then it slowly sort of erodes over time. And yet, what does she do? She keeps going.
I would say that there's a loyalty there, like you were just saying, to her comrades in arms.
Mm-hmm.
That her loyalty was more for them,
right,
than it was for, you know, the company, than it was for the corporation, than it was for the platoon. It was more for the people that she served with.
Right.
That's what I would, that's what I came away with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it also reminds me, so there's the poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson, The Charge of the Light Brigade, which is also about lost causes. You know, this brigade takes this charge that they have no business taking, and they know that they're going to get slaughtered. But they do it anyway, because that's what they do. And at a certain point, you kind of feel like Dietz is in that mindset where she's going to do this anyway because that's what she does. And, I mean, I don't think she knows what else to do for a long time. It's just put one foot in front of another and try to survive this, like, this fucked up war and this fucked up, even more fucked up way she's experiencing it.
Yeah, so you get to a sense, like, this was what was interesting, like, after the first time that she time jumps, and we don't know for sure what's happening. Now, if you read the synopsis, obviously you're going to have a sense of what's happening, but I loved being with Dietz and experiencing her disorientation,
mm-hmm.
and then wondering what it meant, and then dropping again, and that's what they call it, a drop, and realizing, okay, something freaky is happening.
Yeah.
And I loved as she went along through the course of the war and her service, you know, there's that one scene where she's been keeping tabs of the days, but she doesn't remember doing that because that was in one of her time jumps. So it's just really mm-hmm. interesting to see the progression and the time that is actually progressing between these incidents. And you start to kind of see her disillusionment developing. Like, it takes a few jumps, and then she's starting to realize that, wow, we're still fighting the same war, and we really don't have any idea who the enemy actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked seeing her growth as a character. As she realizes, mm-hmm. you know, her shift, it's so subtle, her shift in view. You know, here she is gung-ho, going to get revenge for what happened in Sao Paulo. Yeah. And then realizing that maybe the blink wasn't what she thought it was to begin with.
Right.
And realizing that there are things at play here that are truly lost causes.
Yeah. It's interesting that I love that you brought up how she's, you know, marking her time, because, you know, she has to do that. The corp basically just completely disallows them to be aware of the passage of time.
Isn't that interesting, though?
Yes. Which is one of the, you know, isn't that one of the first things you do if you're trying to brainwash someone?
Yep. You remove them from a sense of being connected to a progression, to a chronology. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, and joke's on them. Dietz is already being removed from that.
I know, right?
But no, they do this. I mean, I think just one more way to disorient their soldiers and keep them malleable and fighting what they want them to fight and not think too hard about who they're fighting and why.
Right. And if you don't know how much time you've been doing it, you sort of lose a sense of yourself and a sense mm-hmm. of your purpose and what you're actually doing out there. So Dietz tried to keep track of the time so that she could put the timeline into order so that she knew which battles occurred when. But
yeah.
We also saw, you know, when she landed in these like battles that occurred later
mm-hmm.
in the timeline, that how stretched and beaten down the mm-hmm. company was. So that you got a sense of, you know, the war is not going well.
Right.
So what do the corporations do? They throw more people at it.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, that is the one resource that they have, you know, that they can count on, or so they think. It's this sort of never-ending supply of bodies that they'll just throw at any problem. It's sort of like, I was listening to a podcast on about the Chernobyl miniseries. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about, you know, how the Soviet Union just, you know, they solved the Chernobyl issue by just throwing bodies at it. Because that's what they had. Their machinery broke down because there was, you know, the radiation was too high. And so they had men up there on these roofs shoveling radioactive debris into a giant radioactive pit.
Seems legit. Uh-huh.
So it's just, and, you know, and it's really interesting. So, you know, you can make that parallel, but there are a lot of other parallels that we can make. And, you know, this is where we're Hurley's background as like a history person, like, mm-hmm. really comes into play.
Mm-hmm. I loved the sense too. I was reminded briefly, I don't know, just weird parallels that I pick up on, you know, as Dietz is going through this whole thing and making, I loved how the character made certain connections with other characters, mm-hmm. and the fleeting nature given the military of some of those connections, but yet they were so they impacted her so incredibly. And yeah. like her relationships before and after the blink, and then her relationships mm-hmm. during her military service. And I loved her sense of loyalty, even though it was to characters that were like completely fucked up in train wrecks. But there's that's that military thing, that fellowship mm-hmm. that civilians don't get, that we can never get unless we actually serve. And she captured that like effortlessly. And so Dietz mm-hmm. is like going, you know, that's why it was so horrible when she saw her teammates, her platoon mates die, and then would come back into another part of the timeline, and here they are alive. And she's like, holy shit, what is happening? Because even though they didn't have a real close relationship, they're still your squad mates.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's that.
Well, and she also knows that there, you know, there are people who are going to do her wrong. And then she comes back to a previous part of the timeline where that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And so she has to deal with this person knowing that, you know, they're going to do some really fucked up shit, and she's going to end up hurt as a result. And yet they haven't done it. And I think, you know, it's like there's this idea, you know, one of the fun things about time travel is this idea of, can you affect, you know, can you change the future if you know the outcomes? Mm-hmm. And Hurley works with that whole idea in a really interesting way. Is in a lot of time travel novels, that's sort of like the premise, right? Mm-hmm. Is that usually someone is trying to fuck with the timeline.
Right, right. Exactly.
And in this case, Dietz is not trying to fuck with the timeline. The timeline is fucking with her.
Oh, that's true. Good mm-hmm. point.
And, but then there's this whole idea of like, okay, but can you change the future? Which is what the corps are trying to do, and the people that, you know, the higher ups who know what's going on with her want to have happen. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's fascinating the way that gets so subtly unwound throughout the entire book, where you don't even realize it until like that last scene, and then just hits you like a ton of bricks.
Oh, that last scene. Oh my God. Boom. I was just like, mm-hmm. fuck. But the whole book kind of like unwound. You know, remember when we talked about Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. the movie Captain Marvel, and how things aren't always as they seem.
Yep.
And that's kind of how I felt reading Light Brigade, was like, okay, things are not always as they seem. And I kind of knew, kind of figured that we were going to get some kind of critique of the, you know, militarized capitalism, as mm-hmm. the Publishers Weekly review calls it, which I think is a great phrase. And we did get that, but yeah, we got it in a way that was so, I don't know if judgmental is the right word, through the eyes of Dietz, who started as gung-ho and then ended up really reevaluating things as, mm-hmm. as, and that's what's so cool about her time jumping, was like these little bits of information would be revealed to her.
Right.
And then she would put them together, like, like in a bigger picture. So she was getting micro contexts and then putting them into a macro context. And it gave her a perspective that nobody else had.
Yes, because, I mean, it's like the frog in the pot of boiling water, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't know how fucked up it is when you're in there and the heat is just turning up and a bit by bit by bit. But she is pulled from like one and then boosh, just dropped in this like cauldron of boiling. And it's like, what the fuck is going on here? You know, so because she's not experiencing that like slow burn, she can see just how fucked up everything is in a way that the other people around her just can't. You know, they've been in this forest for too long, and they just can't see the trees anymore. And or the other way around, I don't know. I'm going with
no. You're right.
All the metaphors right now, but but you know, because Deet doesn't have the luxury of context and rationalization, and she just is experiencing it in these like discrete slices that the fucked upness just becomes this like stark in your face thing.
Oh, I love that. That's so true. It's like she doesn't have that luxury of like a slow kind of development. It's like, here's this slice of the cray. And she's like, where the fuck does this fit on my timeline? So, like, she's having to construct a chronology because she doesn't get, you know, the military has isolated them from keeping track of days and time. So she has to sort of look at it and construct her own timeline. And then she gets to see the bigger picture as a result of her exposure to these little slices of information. And I think telling a story through a character in that way is ingenious. Mm-hmm. It's wow. It as a reader, you're brought along with Deets, and you too are fed the same discrete packets of information. And you do with them as that character does. I found myself like trying to figure out where on the timeline Deets was. Did you do that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things I've been writing for too long because I was then like trying to pick out the plot poles. And every time I'd be like, aha! And then, like, three chapters later, Hurley would be like, nope! And would just fill that right in. And I'd be like, shit.
She had the concrete. No! Denied! You know, but that's her writing. You know, she does not generally write plot holes. So.
No. And it's interesting
She'll leave one. And then you'll be like, And then she'll get to it down the line. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And it's like, damn it! My linear brain.
All right. Did you have anything else you wanted to wrap up with?
Oh, gosh. It's just so good. I mean, we've talked about it, and now I want to go read it, I think, for a fourth time. So.
Right? That's the kind of book it is, because there's so much detail, and you miss things. Because the first time, you're just like, oh, my God, and you're turning the page. You're just like, I got to find out what's happening. The second time, you kind of start looking at nuance and like really seeing how things fit together. Second and third times, you know, you're also looking at, as a writer, I look at plot structure and how she structured it and how it works and unfolds. But this is one of those books that sticks with you. I'm still thinking about it. And I finished it the first time like a month ago, 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I am still thinking about it. I'll find myself in the middle of the day like, man, when Deets jumped into that one place in South Africa, I'll just be like, wow. And then thinking about how it linked to the other, it's that kind of story.
Yeah.
So, friends, Light Brigade, Cameron Hurley, read it. Especially if you're a sci-fi fan. And even if you're not, you will totally just dig this story. It is a hell of a story. And the military context the world building's, it's amazing. It's so worth it. Join the Light Brigade and read the book.
Heck yeah.
All right. Lise, any final thoughts on Light Brigade?
Read it now. Okay.
Okay. All right.
And then join Cameron Hurley's mailing list, because she does cool swag every now and again. when she has a new book coming out, and you can snag some super cool stuff like I did this last time.
This is so true. She does awesome, cool things. And Cameron Hurley also includes a lot of queer characters in mm-hmm. her work. And Dietz was queer. So,
yeah. Oh, I mean, you know, Cameron Hurley called this one a lesbian romance. It's not a lesfic romance.
I don't know if I would call it a romance because it was just like.
There are romantic elements that are.
Dietz definitely identifies as queer. So,
yes.
You know, I mean, she had a female partner. So, you know, I love that about Hurley's work too. She includes a lot of representation. So, you know, strong female characters, strong queer rep. Just, oh my God, just fucking read this book. Okay, anyways. All right, so, Lise, you wanted to do a shout-out. This is our ta-da shout-out section.
Yeah, so this weekend is, I think, actually, is it starting tomorrow?
It starts tomorrow, the 10th.
Starts tomorrow. Dun. At GCLS, the Golden Crown Literary Society Convention, which is the big con for lesfic writers and readers, and that's going on in Pittsburgh, like, pretty much, it'll be right now when this podcast drops. And I'm not there, which is sad.
Me,
but I was going to go to Klexicon, and we don't talk about Klexicon. but you know, it's a really good time. I hope everyone is having an awesome time there. And yeah, it's really fun to go there as an author and to meet people who have like read your stuff and like will fangirl in your face about it. And it's also really cool then to go and fangirl and the face of other authors that you really like. So
I'll add some stuff here about the GCLS and friends. The website is goldencrown.org. This is the 15th annual convention, and the convention usually has tons of panels, and it'll have mm-hmm. like writer's workshops. It will have panels that are geared toward various aspects of writing, but also it'll have fun panels for readers, you know, with authors doing fun things. And there are readings. There's yep. An awards, the GCLS, the Golden Crown, the Goldie Awards also take place for some of the best lesfic books during the year and the different genres. And there's like meetups, and there's a dance, and there's panel discussions, and there's just happy fun times, and then like downtime where you can hang out, talk to people. There's vendors. You can go and talk to some of the publishers, and the authors are sometimes having signings at the vending tables. It is so worth it to engage in this con. And if you go to goldencrown.org, they also have a writer's program. So if mm-hmm. you are interested in becoming a writer or improving your skills, whatever it is, you can apply to this program. There are also scholarships available if you can't afford it. And you are taken through a full curriculum that takes like, I think it's like 9 months. Like it's over mm-hmm. the course of a year.
Yeah,
this is an intensive program that will teach you fundamentals of writing and then guide you through the process. And you will work directly with another writer, with an experienced published writer who will then assess your manuscript. I mean, this is so worth it. GoldenCrown.org, friends. And definitely check it out. Lise and I sadly couldn't make it this year, and we will not speak of it as to why we couldn't make it. But next year it is in Albuquerque, and I will probably be on site there because Albuquerque is my hometown. So anyway, thank you so much, friends, for joining us this week on the Les Geek Out podcast / Cameron Hurley fan club. Lise, did you have any final words of wisdom?
Well, if we're changing the name of our podcast, we need new merch.
We need new merch. We need some merch, damn, with Cameron Hurley all over it. Anyway, thanks, friends. And you can find us on all the platforms. Please like and subscribe. That helps others find us. And if you're interested in, if you're a fangirl or a fan person and you're interested in anything specific, drop us a line. If you want to be on the podcast and talk about something you fan about, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at the LGO podcast, and you can find us at our website. Dun, dun, dun. I can never remember our website. Let's Geek Outcast. Is that us?
Let'sGeekOutcast.com.
That's right. You can find us there, and you can drop us a line on Twitter, or you can just about find us anywhere. Lise and I are both on Facebook. So thank you, friends, and we hope you have a great couple of weeks because we are geekly bi-weekly. Peace out.
Oh.
Aw, I'm a Harley fan.
It's official. We're going to have to, like, get all new, like, Twitter handles, websites.
We could just temporarily do the Cameron fan club when we drop this podcast.
There we go. Or we'll just temporarily switch over whenever she has a new release.
Oh yeah, totally. That's not
just, like, you know, change the curtains and.
I know, right?
We'll have a banner that we painted ourselves with glitter and poster paint. It'll be great.
Oh my god, so 80s. I love it.
Uh-huh.